Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
You know a lot about golf.
Well, we're waiting.
John Ashton in the studio, Jeff Smith in the golf cave at Otter Creek, Columbus, the Plain and Simple Golf School. His triumphant return after an interminable road trip, it seems. Intrepid producer Mark Hunter on the controls, collectively known as those weekend golf guys. Another week is done. It's time to sit down and talk about golf for a while and have some fun doing it. So Jeff,
I had some fun doing it all in my interminable road trip. I was talking golf a lot too, but you know what? Now I get to sit in the confines of the cave and do it. Yeah, which is different than driving my fanny around the eastern seaboard doing it. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Had a good time. Did some teaching with some great teachers. Had some really cool students out east and got to watch a little bit of golf. So
there you go.
And then I drove all the way from the eastern seaboard from Long Island through Pennsylvania, through Ohio, through Indiana, and wound up in Chicago yesterday. And now I am here having some fun with y'all.
Back home again in Indiana.
Yep.
As Gomer Pyle used to say.
Yeah, sir.
So do golf teachers learn anything when they're teaching golf?
Yeah. Slightly different forms of communication. You know, how we go about it. Why is one guy having success? We're not saying different things a lot. Some we are, some we're not. But sometimes it's how we present it, how we can get the message across, so that way the students get better because we were better communicators at what they need to be doing to be better at what they're doing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so a lot of times the best learning for teachers is just when they're hanging around other teachers. Not just watching them teach, but sometimes it's the, hey man, what are you doing? How are you doing it? When you see somebody like this, what's your first course of action? How are you attacking the problem? You know, and sometimes we just share that.
Yeah, one of the things that people always say about when choosing a teacher is that you have to choose somebody that you can get along with. That you like. And I'm sure it works the same way from the teacher's standpoint. I mean, you're not just sitting there, you know, taking money from anybody. There's some people you say, I just can't work with this guy or girl or whatever.
You know, the thing I realize, now there's a few people that I get it, that, you know, that come that might rub me the wrong way in some social situation. But the difference is this, is when they come to me, I'm the expert in the field. They know it. And they are essentially saying, I need your help. And they are now a listener and a learner. And I am the one who is diagnosing the problem, figuring out what to do, giving it to them. And so the personality things tend to go away during that time. I may not want to go out and have a beer with somebody afterwards. It's my choice.
Yeah.
His choice. Right?
Exactly.
How that is. But in that situation, yeah, it's different.
Would a potential student have to have a lesson to know if they can deal with you or not? Or are there like a series of questions that you would like them to ask you to know that everybody's on the same page?
You know, like personality test things?
No, like, you know, whether or not you could just, you know, you help them. If the guys get realistic expectations, I guess is probably the main thing you'd want to know, isn't it?
Well, you know, some, sometimes what I do when I do interview people and we talk a little bit, you know, and I kind of get a handle on where they are and where they want to go and how fast they want to get there.
Right. Okay.
And, you know, and then I start to tell them about time frames before I tell them, hey, look, you know, there are some people, you and I both know, that there are some people who are not going to be able to achieve their goal because their goal is unrealistic for who they are. For example, a guy who says, well, I want to play the tour, but I have a 40-hour-a-week job that I cannot give up. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we did not say anything about talent or age or any of that, right?
Right. Right.
I just talked situations. I want to do this, but I'm stuck doing that. So then we start to have realistic conversations about not the level of play that it takes to get there, but how's he going to overcome that hurdle? Because if he never gets a hold over that hurdle, then in terms of the 40-hour work week to do something else, he will never practice enough to get to the level he needs to play any kind of tour at all. He won't. Because of the time. Because the people who are actually out there are spending the same amount of time that he is. They're actually working on their game during that time, and he doesn't have time for that.
Yeah, so, don't be an idiot. Don't think you're going to get on the tour practicing, you know, 4 hours on the weekend and playing one round on Sunday.
Yeah,
ain't gonna get there, man.
Right. So when you say to me, hey, you know, what about these people and, you know, who are you working with and you know, how do you know if you're going to get along? Sometimes it's a matter of understanding where they're coming from and adapting very quickly to how I can help them best and yet get them on the way to their goals. And then once you do that, then they realize how hard that step may or may not be depending on the person. And then they readjust their goals and I never really have to tell them, hey, look, pal, you're not going to get there. You're 29 years old. And you're a 6 handicap.
And you're working for a living.
And you're working for a living.
There you go.
And you're maxed out from a time standpoint.
Yeah.
You're not going to get better than a 6 handicap if you're working that much in the time you're working. And you're only able to produce this much effort into your golf game. You're kind of peaked out.
What we have just done in a roundabout way, however, is basically set the stage for Jeff Smith imparting some wonderful lessons, no matter how hard you're working, because you got about another 45 minutes to spend with us, right? So do that. It won't kill anybody. We are those Weekend Golf Guys, and we will be right back. Hey, those Weekend Golf Guys, it is us. We are here, John Ashton in studio, Jeff Smith, the Golf Cave, and intrepid producer Mark Hunter. That is the gang. Okay, so we have already set the stage. Hopefully you're sitting here going, well, my expectations are realistic. I don't expect myself to start shooting 70s, even though my average score is 98 today. Right? But, you know, but I mean, that is possible with attention to detail and with a practice regimen of some sort. But really, you know, let's just say, well, let's get back to the other side of this coin, okay?
Yes.
I have gotten some complaints about you.
Oh, brother.
Yes, I have.
In which form?
Of people, you know, and I have experienced it myself. After sitting and studying just for a short while with you and taking a few tips, not even a lesson, but just some tips, some suggestions.
Yeah.
My iron game has gone to pot because, let me tell you what I did. I was out on Sunday, man, and I was 152 yards from the middle of the green. I said, this is perfect because now, because of Jeff, I know how to hit my 7-iron straight, and that's my 150-yard club. Bam! Sounded sweet. Didn't feel it hit. High, straight shot that went over the green.
Oops.
And I am not the only person who has registered this complaint.
I would like to apologize to anybody if I have misled anyone by not saying, you're going to hit it farther, so you better recalibrate.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, that's my usual disclaimer, and I must have missed that during a couple of shows.
My bad.
Yeah, exactly. What were you thinking?
Yeah, you know, but then we can talk about pitching practice in the next one.
Yeah, okay, we can do that too.
The pitching down the hill from an uphill lie, which means you've flown it over the green again, and then you have to pitch it, and it's going to run away from you. Let's talk about that shot.
Well, okay, just why don't we talk about the ones where you're in the wrong, not me, huh? Is that
it's gonna be a short show, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
We need more material.
Yeah,
than that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's a terrible problem to have to live with, but it still puts a smile on your face.
Yeah,
for some reason,
to sit there and go, "Wow, I hit that well." That's the biggest thing in golf, right?
Yeah.
For an awful lot of people,
yeah,
is to strike the ball well.
Yeah,
you know, and I know it's what they want.
Yep.
Yes. Everybody wants lower scores, but they want to do it not by luck.
Yeah.
They want to do it via some skill. They want to have struck the ball solidly and watch it go farther in the air and higher.
Yeah.
They want that.
Yeah. So I was playing with a regular playing partner on Sunday.
Yes.
And at least one of the two of us was paying attention, which was good for me because we finally got to a par three. It was 173 yards downhill. Okay.
Yep.
I have played that par three. I mean, that's at the course I play normally. And I have played that hole repeatedly. I take my 5-iron and I'm on the green or I'm pin high left or right or whatever. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I walk up and he said, "You bringing your 6? I said, "No, I got my 5. He said, "Go back and get your 6. I said, "I always use my 5. He said, "John, go get your 6. I said, "Okay." He said, "Listen to your caddy." I said, "Okay, not a problem, man. You know, I'll do it."
Right.
The only hole I birdied all day. Pin high, about 3-foot putt for birdie.
Well, it sounds to me like somebody needs to pay attention a little bit more to somebody who sees the fact that he's hitting it farther than he normally does.
Or bring that friend with me every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
pay attention to him too?
Well, what it was is, man, I guess I just don't trust it. You know, how often do you have to do it before you can trust it? I guess that's the question.
You know, that's a big question. It's actually a very good question, because lots of people have trust issues because they've hacked it around for so long,
mm-hmm,
that there is no faith or trust, mm-hmm, that they're going to do anything less than that, and they still have that floating question in their head of what's about to happen here.
Yeah.
While still standing over a ball,
and having that question
is very difficult.
And having those negative thoughts is a good way to see to it that, you know, you're not going to hit it as far.
Yeah, it is. You know, it is one of those things that we can do to ourselves that, as you and I both know, people continue to do, is they put themselves in a situation where they're just not going to perform their best because they're standing there doubting what's going on while they're doing it, and so kind of tough to be as good as they can when their mind is distracting them and taking them down a hole that's not all that great.
So what you need to do is you need to pay attention to Jeff. If you're having problems with your irons, and who isn't? Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. None of us. What you need to do is just get in contact with Jeff. You can get to Jeff through our Facebook page at facebook.com/golfguys.
Yeah, send me the videos.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a contact
form. Send me some good videos.
At the bottom of the homepage at thoseweekendgolfguys.com, just scroll all the way down the bottom. It'll say, you know, send us a message. And with all of those, you can upload a video to go along with it, a little attachment, and Jeff will get back to you up close and personal, so to speak. Because I have to tell you, from personal experience, there is nothing that feels better than hitting an iron straight and high and not feeling it when you contact the ball. That cutting through butter feeling is something that you will lie in bed that night and dream about. Trust me on this one. And when you do it consistently, there's no way you can keep yourself off the golf course that way. We are going to talk about wedges. Which one, when, how, where, and why? Coming up next when we come right back. We are Those Weekend Golf Guys. Don't you move.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, those weekend golf guys, it is us. We are here, John Ashton in studio, Jeff Smith, the Golf Cave, and Trepid producer Mark Hunter. That is the gang, collectively known as those weekend golf guys. Of course, two of us play on weekends. One of us actually helps.
I wish I was getting to play a lot.
And he has helped substantially these two guys. I got to tell you, and he can help you too, as we mentioned, thoseweekendgolfguys.com. Just scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you can send a message, upload a video and stuff. You can also get through to Jeff at facebook.com/golfguys. I have got to tell you, man, I have a go-to wedge, and I don't know if I'm doing this right or not. It's just one I feel comfortable with, and that's my sand wedge.
Yeah.
56-degree sand wedge. It's the one I use most often. Now, there are times when I will go with the lob wedge because I need, you know, a shorter, higher. You know, like I got to get over a sand trap, and I need it not to roll out too much when it lands and stuff like that. What is the criteria that you use for which wedge you use in what situations?
Well, a lot of times I like looking at what's required of the shot.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, do I have to force the club through some heavy rough? Because contrary to a popular belief, the rough is not just going to turn your club face to the left. It's going to slow it down. Okay. That's really what's going to happen. Do I have to fight through a lot of rough to get to the golf ball, meaning these are tall grass behind it? Mm-hmm. Or do I need to have the ball fight through a lot of grass just to get up into the air? Maybe there's tall, thick grass right in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, it tells me that I'm going to need to put the ball, you know, more forward or more back. It's going to tell me, do I need more initial launch angle, little more loft right away? You know, it's going to tell me those things. And then, do I need to fly it up over something or not? And if so, do I need the extra trajectory of, say, maybe a lob wedge? When I do that, do I need the extra trajectory help to help stop the ball quickly? Or do I want it to get up in the air like with a 56, but when it lands, it's coming down on a little shallower angle and then roll out? So, you know, I kind of let the situation dictate the shot. So maybe, you know, I got to go over the lip of this bunker and I need it to stop pretty quickly. So what I see that's going to happen there is I'm probably going to take my highest lofted club. I'm probably pulling out the lob wedge.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to put that thing on the front side of center. And so that way when I move my club in a kind of steep coming into the golf ball manner, I'm going to be moving the club down, cutting through the grass behind it. But the ball's forward in the stance, so that way when it's moving down, the club face is actually facing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't want to have to turn the club and, you know, move the club face to the right and raise that leading edge and potentially scull it like I know a lot of people do. I just want to move the ball more forward. I want to make sure that I have a nice, high, soft, safe shot so that way I don't have too many issues. Yeah, that's kind of a big thing. I let the situation tell me what's really going to happen.
Okay, well, let's explain that a little bit because you know what you meant by, you know, the situation will dictate if you want it a little farther back or a little farther forward. At what are the situations?
All right,
for those of us who don't know,
I have to loft it up over a bunker, and I've got a medium rough lie, so it's not really terribly thick and behind it or terribly thick in front of it. Mm-hmm. So I can get the club on the ball, but what if I need to stop it quickly? You know, it's got to fly say 10 feet in the air, but yet it's got to stop within about 10 feet of landing. I need a little trajectory help, so I'm going to go at this with a high lofted club. I'm going to go with a 60. And then I'm going to put the ball more forward in my stance and come at it a little steeply, so I'm moving the club down, the ball pops up in the air, and it's got some spin. So that situation tells me that I really wanted one that didn't roll out much. So I wanted a higher trajectory, a steeper trajectory of the ball coming into the green with some spin on it.
Okay.
And then there's another situation where my ball could be in the exact same place, but the pin is 20 yards away, and I get it to roll a little bit. So maybe that one, I'm going to take the 56 degree and put it not forward, but so the back of the ball is right at the middle of my stance, and I'll come into it not nearly as steep. So the ball will still pop up out of the grass. It'll come in a little lower on the trajectory, and then when it lands about 10 feet, it will roll out about 10 more feet. So that's what I'm looking for, is to try to change the flight of the golf ball and then what happens when it lands there. So a ball, you know, that's a little further back. Now, when I say that, the back of the golf ball is still at the center.
Yeah.
And the club is still moving through. But in this instance, I didn't move it through quite as steeply in a downward fashion.
Okay.
Yes, it was still moving down because at some point it was up in the air. So we're not going to say it wasn't moving down, but it's just, it's not as steep as it was before.
Long time ago, guy told me that you want to judge how much of a swing to put on a wedge for a chip shot or a pitch shot or whatever. Said basically envision yourself throwing the ball underhanded to where you want it to land.
Yeah, that's a very nice way to
going
about that for a lot of people. Yeah, there's a good visual in that. You know, you can kind of pick that out, that you can think of that easily in your head, of just this underhand toss. You know, that kind of helps people get the right amount of effort into the shot. So I think that's a pretty accurate thing that you could say to an awful lot of folks, that they could actually get the sense of it and reproduce it. So I like that.
Yeah, feel free to use it at any time, man.
Yeah, I've done that. I think I was the guy that said that to you.
But yeah. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's been floating around there for quite a while, but that's all right.
What about a pitching wedge? Do you ever use those close to the green in any?
Yeah, sure do. And there's another example of where, you know, maybe I want it to roll out more. Maybe I want to fly a little lower, you know, and maybe I want to keep the back of that golf ball in the middle, and I'm going to have my hands just barely tiny bit in front of the golf ball, and I'm just going to make my arms move back and forth, and it's more of a sweeping shot where your arms are moving low back and low all the way forward, but you've got a pitching wedge, so it pops it up into the air, but it doesn't have a lot of spin.
Okay.
So it doesn't, you know, pop real high up into the air, but because it doesn't have a lot of spin on it, it'll roll out nicely. So, you know, I'll use all the way down to, you know, 6 irons and 5 irons and hybrids and whatnot. Just depends on what kind of shot I want.
Yeah, well, let's say that starts getting confusing.
Yeah, let's say I want to run it there. Maybe it's an uphill shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get a club on the back of the ball, and I don't have to throw it all the way up there in the air. Maybe if I want to, you know, kind of putt something with some loft on it, so it pops up in the air. You know, maybe I'm using an 8-iron or something. It pops up into the air and flies about a third of the way there and rolls the other 2/3 because I used something that was really didn't have a lot of loft. So that's not a bad idea either. So I think people ought to...
Do you still use a putting stroke? Basically, or with, you know, stiff wrists and stuff, or do you break your wrists like regular swinging?
You know, I've taught it both ways, and okay. I think that the more athletic a person is, the less I'm going to try to lock out some joints.
Okay.
You know, they've got some, you know, some hand-eye skills, and they've got some the ability to have touch, and I'll get them to talk and think like it's, you know, they're using a sweeping arm back and forth, and we might not mention it in the way that you'd say, hey, we want to putt this. At different levels of play, but what if they're a player that's kind of new to the game and doesn't have a lot of touch built in yet, you know, haven't developed it yet? I may be talking to them about using more bigger muscles and not using the hands as much.
Gotcha. Okay.
Let's give them some success early, because there's different shots that different levels of players, you know, should be playing.
Yeah. Definitely our boy, and I played with them all, too. You weren't here to hear our painful round 2 weeks ago, and I won't go into that again, but just I know whereof you speak, my man. We are going to be right back. We are those weekend golf guys. Lots more good stuff coming up. Don't move.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And those Weekend Golf guys, be back. John Ashton here, Jeff Smith there, and Trevor producer Mark Hunter the other side of the glass over there, looking and being mesmerized by all the flashing lights. Let me get back to what we were talking about before we took the quick break on the wedge situation. How many wedges do you carry in your bag?
I have four.
Okay.
You know, I've got a pitching wedge, I got a gap wedge, yeah. A lob wedge, and then a sand wedge.
I need a gap wedge, because I'm not even talking about around the green. Close up. I'm talking about, you know, full shots with the wedges. My pitching wedge goes 115, 120. My sand wedge goes about 100. Lob wedge will do about 80.
Yes, you got issues, don't you?
I have a gap.
That yardage a lot.
when I'm 110 yards away from the green, I got nothing.
Yeah, you know? Right. That's like taking a 9-iron out of your bag. You know, you're missing one in the sequence.
Yeah.
For most people, that's a full swing club. And you don't want to have one of those missing.
No, but I don't know what to give up, because sometimes I play with sticklers who go, wait a minute, you got 15 clubs in that bag, boy. I'm sorry.
Do you just look at them and go, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I get? You know what I ought to give you? I have this certificate that you can keep in your golf bag and give it to these guys. It's a congratulations, you've now graduated from the third grade certificate. And you know, you could do that if you wanted to.
but you know, in our conversation, you were saying you got the four and you don't carry a whole lot of fairway woods, because I got a driver, a 3 and a 5 wood. I got a 3 and a 4 hybrid, and then 5 through, you know, pitching wedge irons, and then a sand wedge, lob wedge.
Right. So I think what you have to do is kind of evaluate your own game from the set of tees you play from on the courses you play, and think to yourself, what are the odds of me actually using this club and it mattering to my score a lot? Sometimes I carry a driver, of course, but I swap back and forth between a 4-wood and a hybrid.
Right.
Depending on the golf course.
Right, yeah.
If I'm not going to have a lot of drivers off of holes because there's a lot of dog legs or whatnot, the 4-wood goes back in the bag.
Okay.
And the reason that it does is because it's going to replace my driver on a handful of holes.
Yeah.
If I've got, you know, one of those golf courses that's a, you know, just kind of a long golf course where I'm pretty much going to use the driver almost all day, the odds of me hitting the 4-wood within that round of golf are probably down to about 2 shots.
Hmm.
So I'll put the hybrid in the bag because I'll probably have more at the hybrid distance than I will at the 3-wood off the ground or the 4-wood off the ground distance.
I guess the question then would beg the question is, what is the hybrid distance for you?
My hybrid's about 2 to 220.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And I'll have, you know, and it's a 4 hybrid, and then I go down to my 4 iron, which is about my 190 to 200 club.
Okay. I don't have 3 or 4 irons. I have just the hybrids. And,
right.
You know, my 3 hybrid right now basically serves as the post I hang my towel with a hole in the middle of it on. I pull that sucker out,
so
maybe.
Probably be the one that you would get rid of then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just kind of told you which clubs I would get rid of, but you just told me that you really have a club in your bag that's basically a waste of space.
It is. I don't use it much at all. I don't hit it any better. My 4, I hit better. I just feel more confident with the 4 hybrid than the 3 for some reason. I don't know. It's all mental. I understand.
It's okay.
Yeah, I understand that.
It's okay if you're not going to pull it out for whatever reason. Physical or mental, it's okay. Put it in the trunk.
Anybody want to buy a Ping Rapture 3 hybrid? How about I trade you straight up for a gap wedge?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. It'd certainly be more functional for you.
It would. Yeah. It would, because I am finding, again, because of the tutelage of one Mr. Jeff Smith, I am finding myself much more closer on most every hole now than I used to be. The drives are going farther. I'm hitting longer drives.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know,
closer to the hole
and not, you know, not having to come out from between trees and stuff like that. although the four hybrid, man, I am getting really good at that save yourself shot. If you are in the trees, find a little bit of a gap and just punch it through with the four hybrid.
Sure.
That's a necessary shot. People should practice that.
Yeah, I agree, because they don't have a lot of loft on them, so you can get it up, you know, knee high pretty easily.
Yeah.
Without having it climb too high in the first, say, you know, 50 yards to 100 yards of the shot, which is really pretty important.
Yeah.
To be able to hit one about, you know, head high, so to speak.
Right. Keep it under the branches.
Yeah, and so that it does roll out.
Yeah.
And goes where you want to.
Yeah.
It's a real good idea to practice that stuff.
Yeah, it is. You know, don't do it for the first time in the golf course, because, well, what's the Scottish expression? You were telling us earlier about how to take care of an injury to your...
Oh, yeah, to the Goonies.
Goonies.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
How to survive the being hit by the being hit in the Goonies.
Yeah, well, you know, you take that four iron or hybrid, whichever, and hit it incorrectly and actually hit one of those trees.
And it comes back and hits you in the Goonies?
Yeah, that Irish guy, Rick O'Shea, is going to gonna take care of you there. So
what happens? What do you do? You know, if you get hit in the Goonies, what? I mean, you're going to hit the ground.
Besides fall down and cry, I don't know. Well, I've never gotten beyond the falling down and crying part.
I would think that you would probably, you know, like not walk around.
Yeah,
I would think you'd probably, you know, maybe like get a cold can of Coke or your beer and kind of. Yeah. Kind of cool down the offended area, you know.
Uh-huh. Or just
I probably would be sure to not apply very much pressure at that point.
Go on without me, I'll catch up if I survive.
Yeah. How about this one? You know, if the pain is significant, which of course we all could imagine that being the case.
Oh man, I mean, it hurts just to think about this.
And the pain scenario. Does not subside within a few minutes. Uh-huh. You may want to make sure that there's not any major league long-term damage.
yeah, like I'm going to do that in the golf course. Right. Excuse me, bud, but does this look right to you? Yes. No, that ain't happening. Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think so. How about this one? If the pain lasts more than, say, a half an hour.
Uh-huh.
You know, you may want to seek attention.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would do...
Appropriate attention.
I would seek medical
attention
at that point, as opposed to just seeking attention.
That's right. Yeah.
I think that's probably how to survive getting hit in the Goonies.
Oh, man. It's just, you know, it sounds funny, but I have seen it happen to people. Maybe not necessarily the Goonies, but... I mean, some other substantially easily broken pieces of your anatomy.
Did you just sit back and roll in laughter? And
you know, I'm afraid I did. As Shakespeare said, there's something within us that delights at the misfortune of our friends. But you can't help it, man. Somebody hits, especially when they hit this great shot. You hear it, you know, you see this shot, and the swing looks so good, and you hear the contact with the ball, and it sounds so good. And then immediately thereafter, you hear the clack as it hits the tree.
That's funny right there.
That's right. That's right. And then you're always looking around going, where to go? Where to go?
Spoken like a true friend.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Spoken like a true guy who's got a buck on the line. On that
got him on this one.
That's
now.
Right.
That's Help's right. on the way.
All right, and you're going, the momentum has shifted.
Here's a cold. Whoa, no, that's my last beer. No, you're on your own, buddy.
As you open it up. Guzzling half of it as quickly as you can so that you get it over to him. No, let me see if he can spill the rest of it out on his feet while he's... writhing in pain.
Yeah, sitting on the ground, just rocking back and forth, trying not to cry in front of his buddies. Oh, man. No, I've gotten hit in the shoulder. That's the only place Rick O'Shea hit me in the shoulder once. And that smarted for quite a while. So getting hit in a very, let's say something.
Sensitive areas.
Something a little more sensitive than your shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, getting hit in your, getting hit in the face or the throat or something like that. That could be dangerous, man. That could be dangerous.
Yeah. Can you imagine? That could probably kill somebody, I would imagine.
So this is why you would need to practice with that, that four iron. Let's get out of the woods. Maybe you should still use the foot wedge if you're the least bit questioning whether or not you can do this correctly.
Well, because, you know, most people, they don't want to wear a cup to play golf in. So.
Yeah, it's totally unnecessary.
Helmet.
That's right.
Safety goggles.
Can you imagine a guy rolling into the golf course and putting on a helmet?
Goalie mask and a helmet and those big gloves. I'm ready.
Let's hit them.
How funny would that be?
And we're ready for some more stuff, too.
You got guys on the porch. They're taking bets.
We've got some more conversational tidbits to throw out at you as we're coming right back. We are those Weekend Golf Guys. Don't move. Yeah, we got more time. Don't you move anywhere. We are those Weekend Golf Guys. It's John Ashton in studio. It's Jeff Smith in the Golf Cave at Otter Creek. It is Mark Hunter, intrepid producer at the controls, and it is you hanging intently, waiting for Jeff to say something that is going to magically make you a scratch golfer. So say something
pencil.
Magical.
Pencil.
Pencil. Erasor.
Second scorecard. Here's the one we're playing with, and here's the one we're taking home.
Oh, man.
Here we go.
I'm able now, especially like on par fives and stuff, I'm able to get within 100 yards for my third shot, at least.
You know, that's really what all you have to do when playing a par five.
Yeah.
You know, you hit one off the tee. Lots of people sit there and go, I got to hit the biggest shot ever because I got to get home in two. I got to put myself in that position. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, you really don't.
No.
You hit one straight shot and then one medium quality struck shot and another medium quality struck shot, both straight, you're inside of 125 yards.
Yes, you are.
And if somebody said to you, you're going to play a par three golf course on for four holes that you're going to be on this hole, you're going to have 125-yard par threes, you're licking your chops.
Yep.
You're thinking that par is the worst score you're going to make on that hole.
Yep. Yep.
And yet I see so many people butcher a par five because they instantly think they have to hit it farther.
Yep.
Just because the hole's longer, like you forgot they gave you an extra stroke.
Yeah, that's why they call it a par five.
Yeah. So the best chance to have your best score is always with a short, controllable club in your hand coming into that green.
Yeah.
All the time. You know, and then there's that whole thought about, oh, well, you know, there's studies done, and the guy that studies the PGA Tour on the strokes gained characteristics is that it's always how close you can get to the green because they're making the assumption that the average player also has a good 50-yard wedge, which they don't.
Mm-hmm. No.
Pros do.
Yeah.
So if they get it up there a little closer, it actually is the same or helpful. But a lot of times, the regular guy, he needs full swing shots coming in to these holes instead of these partial shots because they can't do it because they don't practice it.
We don't practice it enough. We're not in the situation enough. Amen to that, brother. Amen to that.
Who in the right mind tries to have, I want a 35-yard shot? If this is the average player, he does not want a 35-yard shot ever.
Yeah, because he has no idea what to do.
No.
You know, I got four wedges.
Practice.
What do I hit? You know, and I got brother-in-law, and he's got a 35-yard shot. He's pulling out a 7-iron and putting it. I go, okay, whatever. Whatever. Let me ask you a question. I've been playing with some people, and I have noticed one of the things that has happened, again, because of your tutelage, is that I don't leave ball marks on the greens. I leave craters.
You're playing on some pretty soft greens then, aren't you?
Well, and these balls are coming down. I mean, I hit my irons, especially, you know, from 7 up. Do I have to pay anybody royalty for saying that? From my 7 iron on up higher, I hit them very high. And I guess I've got some pretty big spin on them, too, because when they come down, they basically stop or maybe hit and then bounce a couple of feet in some direction.
Right.
But not very far. And the I go up there, and there's a flap of grass that's pushed to the back side of the ball, or actually would have been the front side of the ball when it hit the green. That I have to fix. And I don't see a whole lot of other people. Well, I do see other people doing it that don't take the time to fix the ball mark. What are you thinking?
Yeah,
but
they don't.
Am I doing it right or doing it wrong or overdoing it? Because anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So,
well, to a point.
Okay.
To a point. I mean, let's think about it in terms of, you know, like eating pizza.
Okay.
I love to go eat pizza.
Yeah.
But I could easily go overdo that.
Yeah.
So I like to have a beer every once in a while, and I could overdo that too.
And you have on many an occasion.
Well, that's been quite a while. That's been back in the day.
Yeah, I gotcha.
As they say.
I gotcha. Yeah, that's your story anyhow, man. I'll swear to it.
I'm sticking to it.
Yep.
So, you know, in terms of, you know, striking the golf ball, getting a big high trajectory on it, coming down, having some spin, it's what you want.
Okay.
You're looking to throw the ball up into the air so that it comes down at a good trajectory without the wind messing with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's not just floating up there, but, it, you know, it's well struck and it's high and it's piercing. That means you hit it high and you hit it far.
Yes.
And if it comes down at an angle that makes, you know, as you mentioned, it's like craters, well, certainly it had enough spin to hold its position, maybe move backwards a little bit. But nonetheless, you know, certainly the greens are softer. You wouldn't have a crater.
Right.
But
right.
Nonetheless, the angle that it's coming in is pretty steep, which means you can kind of throw darts now.
Yeah.
You know, you can throw it. You know, if you got a back pin, you can feel free to throw it 3/4 the way back there and have a slightly uphill putt, and you're in good shape.
Yeah, I have found it to be so much easier for a, you know, a mathematical standpoint, for, you know, a ciphering standpoint. Basically, I've practiced enough. Yes, there's that word, man. Not only do I use the word, but I use the technique. But I have practiced enough now to have a pretty good idea how far I'm going to hit my irons.
Yeah.
And so
that's, you need that.
Yeah. That is very important. Once you get over the shock and awe of hitting a 7-iron 165 yards when it's only supposed to be 150, and then realizing that you can do it on a somewhat consistent basis, you go, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to like refigure this entire bag out now.
Yeah.
But it is doable. So I'm doing it right then. I'm not doing it wrong. I thought maybe it was supposed to happen, Jim.
No, I think you got to realize what you're landing it on is pretty soft.
Yeah.
You know, if it was landing on something that was firmer, you'd get a big bounce and release a little bit. But if you're, you know, if they've got a lot of water on the greens to keep them going, you know, healthy and whatnot in the middle of the summer, you know, I think you've got to realize that it's about what you're landing it on too.
Okay. Let's real quick, in the few minutes we have left, I know we don't talk about the pros a whole lot, but next weekend's a Ryder Cup. And like they say, it's not golf, it's the Ryder Cup. As of this morning, I have not heard the final pick. It's like I heard last time it was between Justin Thomas, our buddy, and Bubba. But people don't want Bubba because they say he's not a team player.
But yeah, I've read that.
Even though you're playing in teams, golf is really not a team sport, is it?
Well, it until you get to a format like this, it is definitely not a team sport. Even if you're playing on a college team,
right?
You know, certainly, you know, on a high school team, certainly the decision you make affects your fellow players in terms of does your team win from the aggregate score. So you have to pay attention to that. But you know, but mostly golf is an individual sport.
Yeah.
Here we are talking about the Ryder Cup, and you are talking about spending time with someone. You're talking about the chemistry in the room. You know, you're talking about who wants to play with whom. You want to talk about whose games match up well with other people's games because, you know, there is that alternate shot format that always seems to mess with us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there is that point where, you know, you've got to have good matchups. And
right,
you know, if they're saying one player doesn't fit, well, maybe maybe they're right. I don't know. Yeah. I've even read, you know, stuff like, you know, Tiger Woods being the assistant captain.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading some things about the possibility of actually having him be the final pick and be a playing captain from a, you know, a surprise, maybe intimidation factor, whatever. I even read that. So there's all kinds of things going on out there. If that happens, I would be completely stunned.
Hopefully he got enough game back to actually be intimidating.
Well, he's certainly untested, mm-hmm. but he's no stranger to competition.
That's true.
And he's not going to fold under pressure. We know that.
But
at the same time, we just don't know if his game is at that kind of a level to even be worthy of consideration for that in a captain's pick format. But
I'm still pushing for Justin Thomas.
I would.
Yeah, local boy.
Kids played very well.
Know his dad. Maybe could get some free tickets. Who knows? You know, I mean.
Hey, you already got J.B. Holmes. You could have two guys from the state of Kentucky.
Well, that'll put us on the map, won't it, huh?
Sure would. You'd be known for a little bit more than the bucket.
And the bourbon.
Known as the bourbon.
Yeah.
Right.
Cool beans. All right. As we have mentioned repeatedly on this show and often, please go to thoseweekendgolfguys.com. While you're there, scroll down the homepage to the bottom where there's a little send a message form and get in contact with Jeff or any of us if you have any kind of questions or anything like that. Go to facebook.com/golfguys. Like us there. You can also get through to Jeff there. Upload videos at both of those locations. And then follow us on Twitter at WKNDGolfGuys. Remember to hang out. Oh, we are powered by Golf Talk America, the Golf Talk America Network on audioboom.com. I forgot to mention that last week, and I have been severely chastised. I apologize.
I can't believe that you didn't get to say audio boom.
Golf Talk America Network, audioboom.com. Those weekend golf guys, it is us. Hey, go play some golf.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.